So today we're going to talk about, I guess, the stories after Jacob, who's known as Israel, named Israel, and his sons, and we're going to particularly focus on Joseph. There's a tiny bit of overlap between what David shared on Jacob and what I'm going to share now on the 12 sons, and particularly Joseph. And I think what comes through, we're reading the story, and again reflecting what David said, just the entire messy family relationships that existed at that time. David described as dysfunctional, and that continues on in the children of Jacob. And we can learn a lot that even in the midst of all those unconventional relationships, God can work, you know, and God was working. What stands out as well is the, what was happening in that story, and we all know the story, I guess, a bit about the story anyway. Joseph in Egypt. And when he was in Egypt, just the changing circumstances from boom to bust, as it were, the economy, how that was going. And we can also, and that's interesting, that comes out in the story. And I'm going to do this story over 2 weeks, but you couldn't just fit it all in. We're essentially going from Genesis 35 to Genesis 50. You couldn't really fit it into one Sunday. So we're doing it over two Sundays. And another thing that stands out for me, particularly, is things like the numbers from my background. But in all of this, in all that was happening among the 12 children of Jacob, and particularly Joseph, and all of those circumstances, God stands out. God is in the midst of everything. And God appears, and God is shown to be, you know, in the midst and in charge and doing things. And that's great. So, we make a start. And that's the bit of the background. But I suppose, you know, in general, most people are familiar with, you know, the basics of the story, with Joseph and going into Egypt, etc. And I just wanted to get people involved a bit in the story, just to see, you know, a bit of interest, you know. What would and I'd like a show of hands at this stage for a question. The development, because we can see that this story, the end of Genesis, moves in almost seamlessly into Exodus. And in Exodus, Moses appears and brings people out of Egypt. But now we're going into Egypt, and essentially we're going to, particularly next Sunday, we're going to talk about slavery in Egypt. Would people like to tell me who is responsible for the development of slavery in Egypt? Just name somebody, name a character who people think were responsible for the development of. Anne says Ramesses. Go on. Anybody else? Any other name? Any other name sticking out as the development of Pharaoh? Mary? Anybody else going with that? David, brother David, a voice crying in the wilderness, says Joseph. Is that? So we've three names. We've Ramesses, Pharaoh, and Joseph. So we'll pretty next Sunday we'll see how that develops. No, so. Yeah. But remember the question. Yeah, I'll say at this point most people didn't vote, you know, which I was disappointed. You know. Anyway. I'll get to that. don't mention the war. Now, anyway, we start with the sons of Isaac, starting at Genesis 35. Now, Jacob had 12 sons. He'd one daughter, Dinah, but 12 sons. And the sons of Leah, who was his first wife, as it were, Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. Then the sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. Then he had also Bilhah was Rachel's maidservant, Dan and Naphtali, and the sons of Leah's servant, Zilpah, her maidservant, Gad and Asher. So these are all described as the brothers. In the story as you go on, they're all described as the brothers. But in fact, and God, and they're accepted in that culture at that time as the brothers. And David explained that that's, you know, that even though say Bilhah was Rachel's maidservant, she had the baby, as it were, for the family, Dan and Naphtali. So that was accepted, and David explained that, the same Zilpah. And these are all described as the brothers in the following story. But in fact, they're a combination. The way we look at it, from our culture, we see these as a combination of brothers and stepbrothers. So within that family of Isaac, you had four wives, as it were, and children associated with those four wives. And while in that culture, it was accepted as these are all the sons and individual brothers, we see it kind of differently from our side. So it's as we see it as a combination of brothers and stepbrothers. So it's important to see it the way they saw it, because that was the case. They were the 12 brothers. They were the 12, and out of them come the 12 tribes. So, and these were the sons of Jacob who were born to him while he was in Paddan Aram. And that was up with Uncle Laban, as we saw David explain that. So, not born within the promised land, but born somewhere else in Paddan Aram. And we look, that's up in either northern Syria, southeast Iraq, or some part of southern Turkey. Now, it's somewhere up there. It's quite a long distance. Haran was the city up there in that region of Paddan Aram. And yet their promised land was down here in Canaan, Shechem, Hebron. They were born. So while their father had been for a while up here, he went up here to find a bride, and all this happened with Leah, Rachel, Zilpah, and Bilhah, etc. So they were... At this stage, we're now into the fourth generation. Abraham first, Isaac, Jacob, and to the 12 sons. We're into that fourth generation, and they're still not, they're still up and down. They're still not settled. And in a sense, they remind me of, you know, they're nomadic. They move around from place to place with their herds, their sheep and goats and cattle. But essentially, they're a nomadic tribal group. This was what was going on at that time in that society. So, and after Jacob came from Paddan Aram, he arrived safely in the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped with inside the city. And Shechem at that time would have been a Canaanite city. It was here. Hebron was down here. Etc. Bethel. The river Jabbok, where Jacob wrestled God, etc. Now, and for 100 pieces of silver, he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. There he set up an altar and called it El-Eloah Israel. So, the Canaanites were settled. They had, the archaeology says that, you know, they had a civilization there and towns. And coming into this area was a guy who was essentially a traveler. And they'd been there before Abraham, Isaac, and they had prospered in that society with their flocks, etc. And they'd moved around and they were down in Beersheba. But they were coming back into Canaan, and he had to buy a piece of ground to pitch his tent. Because essentially like Abraham, he lived in tents. So, and he was near, within sight of that Canaanite city. And they're a wealthy tribe. They're doing well. They have lots of cattle, and we know they've prospered, his father before him and his grandfather, etc. But they're not a large tribe. And then And I won't go into this. And this happened because of the 12 brothers and a sister called Dinah. She went off and she met a local guy called Shechem, son of Hamor, what was mentioned here. And he Shechem really fancied Dinah. They were together. They slept together. And he wanted to marry her. He was really very fond of her. And it seemed to be all agreeable. The father, Shechem's father, Hamor, was meeting Jacob. Can I marry your daughter, etc., etc. He was a Canaanite, Shechem. But they were deceived by Levi and Simeon. They were outraged that she had gone off with a Canaanite, essentially. And they deceived the Shechem and all of the men in that city to get him circumcised. And obviously, things weren't sterile in those days, and they all got infections, and all these men of the town of Shechem were all in pain after the circumcision. And then... Yes, well, okay. And anyway, two of Jacob's brothers, Simeon and Levi, who were Dinah's brothers, they took their swords and they attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. Now, out of Levi comes the tribe of priests in Israel later on. So they put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. And the sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies, and looted the city where their sister had been defiled, even though she liked the guy. Wanted to stay with him and marry him. No, well, I get that impression. So the sons of Jacob came upon and looted the city where their sister had been defiled. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else and went out to the fields. They carried off all their wealth and all their women, taking as plunder everything in their houses. So they did this, terrible thing, I think, killing everybody, all the men. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed. So they were in a vulnerable situation, even though as a small, wealthy tribe or large family, they were rich. But they were surrounded by the Canaanites and all these other groups. So, and they'd made themselves very vulnerable by doing this. And how could they be protected? So it was possible that if all the others joined forces against them, they could be wiped out. So they're vulnerable. And therefore things, they could stay vulnerable and things need to change. And this story, as it develops, things change, and then we go on to Exodus, things change very dramatically. But that's sort of the background to this, that they're still in a vulnerable situation. So, then go on to about the story about Joseph as such and his brothers. Now, Joseph lived in the land where his brother, Jacob lived in the land where his brother had stayed, in the land of Canaan. So around that area that they were living. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, who were actually his stepbrothers, but they say he were his brothers, the brothers of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife, and he brought their father a bad report about them. So he told tales. He squealed on them, and they got into trouble, essentially, so they didn't like him, obviously, because of that. Now, Israel, David has described last week and before that, the favoritism that was being shown in relationships. People weren't being treated equally, and favoritism was being shown. Now, Jacob, or Israel, loved Joseph more than any of his other brothers because he'd been born to him in his old age, and he was born to him by his favorite wife, Rachel, and he made an ornate robe for him. Other people have described this as a multicolored, but the Bible says just ornate. He made an ornate robe. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. So there was a preference, people weren't being treated equally, and resentments developed in this large family. Understandably, resentments developed. Now, he also was, Joseph was a guy who had dreams, and he told these dreams, he told one particular dream to his brothers, and they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose, my sheaf of grain, and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. His brothers said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, I had another dream. Yeah? Yeah. And this time, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. And then when he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So, okay, his father was a bit rebuked, but rebuked him. But his father, you know, what's this about? You know, this could be serious, you know. Whereas the brothers just gave in to their emotions about it. The father said, well, something might be happening here. So, then Joseph goes to his brothers. Now, his brothers had gone to graze their flocks near Shechem. At this stage, I think they were down in Bethel, which was further south. Jacob had moved down there. And they'd gone up quite a distance to Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them. Very well, he replied. And so he said to him, go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring back word to me. Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. So again, I think Hebron is further south than Bethel, I think. But so that's where he went from, and quite a distance up, he was going north. He arrived at Shechem, and a man found Joseph wandering the fields and asked him, what are you looking for? And he said, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks? And they have moved on from here. So they were travelers. Nomadic is in that culture is the word, because they moved with their flocks to get the pasture and graze their flocks. The man answered him, let's go to Dothan. So they did go on. Now, so then there was a plot emerging by the brothers. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. They saw him first in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said to one another. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of the cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. But Reuben, one of the brothers, born of Leah, he tried to rescue them from his hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Just throw him in the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So Reuben was trying to deceive the other brothers and eventually rescue Joseph from the cistern. Then obviously Reuben went off somewhere. When Joseph came to the brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they threw him into the cistern, and the cistern was empty and there was no water in it. Now, the Ishmaelites were coming from the land of Gilead, which was maybe up near Syria today. And they were traders passing Dothan, and they saw a caravan, a group, I guess, of Ishmaelites and a camel coming from Gilead. And they were trading, and they were going down to Egypt with spices, balm, and myrrh. And Judah, another of the brothers of Leah, said, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh and blood. And they agreed. They wouldn't kill him. They were going to sell him on to the Ishmaelites. And the Ishmaelites came from Ishmael, the son of Hagar, through Abraham. So when the Midianite merchants, Midian, that area near around Gilead in Syria, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites. But, you know, Jesus was betrayed for 30 shekels. But, you know, selling him again on. You know, there's a sort of a reminder there. He was betrayed and sold for money. When Reuben returned from the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He said to his brothers, "The boy isn't here. Where can I turn now?" And they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornate robe back to the father and said, "We found this. Examine it and see, is it your son's robe?" He recognized it is his robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him, and surely Joseph has been torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father Jacob wept for him. And in the meantime, the Midianites, or the Ishmaelites, sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So at this stage, Joseph had reached Egypt. So this is Dothan up here. He'd been in, they'd gone from Shechem. This was the area that Jacob would have been in. They moved, they'd, with their flocks, they moved up past Shechem, or up here. This is Shechem, isn't my sight is so bad. And then into Dothan. The Midianites would have come from this area on their way down to Egypt. So that's essentially, they brought him down past Gaza and into Egypt. And he was sold on to Potiphar. But the Lord was with, and the great thing is that in this, the midst of the story, God shines through. And the Lord, in this terrible circumstance of being sold, basically as a slave, into Egypt, the Lord was with Joseph. He was taken down to Egypt and sold to Potiphar in Egypt, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. He bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master Potiphar saw that the Lord God was with Joseph and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, he found favor, this slave boy, Joseph, found favor in Potiphar's eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of the household and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. So quickly, you know, Joseph's CV was developing. You know, he was good at his job and he was getting promoted. And he found favor because God was with him and he found favor. And so, you know, he could add this to his CV, in charge of Potiphar's household from whatever. You know, things were going well for him, even in the circumstances he was in. He put him in charge of the household and everything he held, the Lord blessed. And because Potiphar had recognized God, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. So he spread, Joseph's presence spread blessing. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar did, had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar was really encouraged and he gave, left everything he had in Joseph's care. He was in charge and he didn't concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Like, you know, Potiphar had it made. Joseph was there to take care of all the arrangements. And then, trouble and strife, Potiphar's wife. Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of him and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," she told her. He stood his ground. "My master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house," he put it, you know. "No one is greater in this house than me. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife." And he says, "How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" He doesn't say it's against sin against Potiphar. He's proclaiming God in the midst of this situation. "How could I do a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her. or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and then, unfortunately, none of the household servants were there. She caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. So he was in trouble because, he should have had people in the house as witnesses to see what she was doing. And now he was in trouble. And he ended up in prison because when his master Potiphar heard the story, his wife told him lies. "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger, and Potiphar put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners, it was kind of a political prisoner, where the king's prisoners were confined, and he ended up in that place. But while he was in prison, the Lord God was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. He was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in everything he did because God was with him. Again, he could write that in his CV. "I'm now in charge of everything happening in the political prison in Egypt." It was a great thing to add to his CV. "I'm now able to manage all the prison." You know, he was being promoted, constantly promotion in his, in wherever he was being promoted. He was doing well in a sense. And then one of his other talents was he could interpret dreams. So, and he was interpreting a dream for both the baker and the cup holder, who were Pharaoh's baker and Pharaoh's cup holder were in prison with him. And they both had dreams, but there was no one to interpret them. So they needed someone to interpret these dreams. So Joseph said to them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So interpretations can come from God. So Joseph was giving God the glory for this. And he, in terms of the cupbearer, he gave him this interpretation. The cupbearer had a dream. This, and I won't go into it, but Joseph gives the interpretation. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, so you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well for you, remember me, Joseph, and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." So it was the right interpretation. The cupbearer was released, but he actually forgot about Joseph being in prison. He'd forgotten the good man that Joseph was, and that because of Joseph, he had given him the interpretation. So 2 years later, he was still in prison. Pharaoh had a dream himself then. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. And after them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those in the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He also fell asleep again and then had a second dream. 7 heads of corn, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. He had 2 dreams, and then he woke up. It had been a dream. But he didn't know the meaning of these dreams. And then it was his cupbearer gave the name of Joseph. And they brought Joseph out of prison to interpret the dreams. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream and no one can interpret it, but I heard it said that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." So that was what Pharaoh said to Joseph. And Joseph says, "I can't do it," he replied, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." So he's giving the glory to God in this. And then Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dream. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, And the seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that come up afterwards are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. These are 7 years of famine. So he's revealing, God is revealing to Pharaoh what he's about to do. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows will be severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. So in all this, he's showing what God is going to do. The matter has been decided by God, and God will do it soon. He's giving glory to God in all this. And so obviously, Pharaoh is very impressed. And there's a plan, and there's a 20% tax rate. So now, now let Pharaoh look for a discerning. So this is Joseph still talking, and he's saying, now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth, i.e. the 20%, of the harvest during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food in these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. Seemed a good plan. Keep things in reserve. The food shall be held in reserve for the country to be used up during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country will not be ruined by famine. Now, one would say that's a very good plan. You know, you're going to, out of the abundance you have, you're going to keep a bit of it, i.e. the 20%, you'll store it up in big stores, and you're going to use it then when the famine will come. And, you know, it sounds like a good plan. And the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and his officials, and he asked them, where can we find someone who we can put in charge of this? And Pharaoh says, one in whom is the Spirit of God. So even Pharaoh recognizes what's needed is to implement this, is that you need to find one in whom is the Spirit of God. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is none so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and of my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So again, a huge promotion for Joseph. He's now in charge of the palace. All the people of Egypt are to submit to him. And he's second in command to Pharaoh. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So out of this, because in Joseph rests the Spirit of God, Pharaoh has promoted him and given him a huge job. And so he's in charge of Egypt. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. He took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's fingers. He dressed him in the robes of fine linen and put a gold chain in his neck. He had him ride in a chariot at his second in command, and people shouted before him, make way. Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Fantastic. Huge promotion from a guy who'd come in as a slave, then a prisoner, and now in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift a hand or a foot in all Egypt. And he gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah, and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. So he gave him a new name, and he gave him this lady called Asenath to be his wife. Now, obviously, she wasn't a Hebrew. You know, she wasn't what we call a God-fearing lady. She was the daughter of a priest of On, obviously one of the priests of that land of Egypt. You know, so I don't know what they believed, but, you know, she wasn't your typical, what the Christians say, your typical God-fearing woman, like, you know. So, and yeah, But it was, you know, that was accepted. He was getting a wife. Yeah. Yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we don't hear too much more about her, but anyway. So he marries, and then he was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh the king. And Joseph went from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. And during the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. He collected all the food produced in these 7 years of abundance and stored in the cities. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. And he stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. It was a huge harvest. Maybe, yeah. So, I mean, the Nile Delta is so fertile because the waters of the Nile give it irrigation. And back in those days, it was flood and bring silt with it, and it was so fertile. And that's they worship the Nile because it provided everything for them. So generally that whole region, the Sinai, and further west of that land of Egypt is infertile, it's desert. But along the Nile, you have a huge fertile area because it's watered from the Nile. And in that area, it produced huge abundance for those 7 years. And before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On. He named his firstborn Manasseh, and it's because God has made me forget all of my trouble and all of my... So it was the name, this is what the name meant, it's God, it's made me forget all the hardship, the previous hardship in my life. And the second son he named Ephraim. It's because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. So these are kind of the meaning of the names of Manasseh and Ephraim. And then famine came. The 7 years of abundance came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all other lands as well, but in the whole of Egypt there was food. And when all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then, because they had no more food because of the famine, so the people of Egypt went to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said to them, "Go to Joseph and do what he tells you." And when the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened up all the storehouses. Now, did he give away the grain for nothing? You know, think charity begins at home. You know, you think you'd give it away, wouldn't you? You know, charity, concern, trochra, all that, you know. You think you'd give it away. No, he sold the grain to the Egyptians for the famine was severe. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. So as such, it wasn't an aid program. You know, it was a commercial program to sell grain to the Egyptians. You know, there's no free lunches here, like, you know. He said, "I'm going to sell the grain." Now, he'd taken the grain, 20% of the harvest had been taken, not bought, put into the storehouses, and then it was sold. So, that was the economic, an economic situation has developed. Things were taken, and then they were sold on. Of course, then there was also famine back in Canaan, around Beersheba and all that land, Canaan, the land of Canaan. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you just keep looking at each other? Have you any cop on here? We're all starving. There's grain down in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we may live and not die." And the 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt, but he didn't send Benjamin, Joseph's brother. So he was the very youngest. He'd been born, the last born of Rachel, and she died in childbirth. he was afraid that harm might come to him. So 10 of the brothers went down. Benjamin stayed at home. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain. So everyone was going down to Egypt to buy grain, for there was famine in the land of Canaan also. So the brothers come looking for grain. Now, he was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain. So you went to, if you wanted grain, you went had to go to Joseph and buy the grain. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him in fulfillment of the prophecy, except they didn't know he was his brother, that the man, because his name now was Asenath, I think, or they had given him a new name. We go back, it's a long one, yeah. They'd given him a new name, and they didn't, they didn't recognize him, because he's now wearing fine robes and linen and everything, you know, signet ring in his finger, etc., etc. And he recognized them, but he presented to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, "You're spies. You've come to see that our land is unprotected, where our land is unprotected." And they said, no, we're not spies. We've come to buy food. We are the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies. Now, I'll skip through a bit of the story, but he was sending them away, and he put some silver into one of their sacks, and then they caught him. And on the third day, he said to them, "Do this." Joseph said to them, "Do this, and you will live. For I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, where the rest of you go and take grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your